I'm Amy, sex educator, sex and relationship coach, and co-owner of PurePleasureShop.com.
And I'm April, sex toy maven, VP of Hot Octopus, and I've dedicated my life to the business of sex. We're two people with a passion for educating and inspiring shame-free conversations about sex and relationships.
Welcome to the Shameless Sex Revolution. Want to learn more? Go to shamelesssex.com. And for 15% off of some of our favorite sex toys, use coupon code SHAMELESSSEX at purepleasureshop.com.
You are listening to a pleasure podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Well, hello, everyone.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome to the Shameless Sex Podcast. We're recording from our sexy hotel room in Los Angeles.
It actually is quite sexy. It's the really SLS. Sexy. We walk in and there's like red carpeting and mirrors, and it is quite sexy.
Bang worthy.
The mirrors everywhere.
That's like the sign, at least to me, of a bang worthy room is there's mirrors everywhere. You can watch yourself.
Have you been to hotels where they don't have mirrors anywhere, like only in the bathroom, one small mirror for your face?
Oh yeah,
but no other mirrors. Yeah. I've actually gotten irritated before.
Boring.
Like, where do you have a
mirror? We have these sliding doors. We can move it a little to the left, and then you and I could bang on my bed and watch ourselves.
Yeah.
Should we do that right now?
No.
All right, we got to go. Bye.
We don't bang.
We're here on a podcast tour to connect with other podcasters about our upcoming book. We just guested on the Double Teamed podcast with Cammy and Nikki, and they're
so
fucking
fun.
Awesome.
That was so fun. They're twins.
They're twins.
And they're gorgeous twins.
And they're hilarious and
so
very
funny.
Intelligent, wonderful humans. And our episode will be airing on their show in early November. And we will also put that episode on our show because you have to hear them. They're awesome. Tomorrow, we go on Sex with Emily, which was our original inspiration for podcasting.
So that's a
big
full
deal.
Circle, Amy.
Full circle.
Because the last time we were on together was 2017, January.
With her. And together, yeah.
With her.
You've been on her show.
I did, yeah.
Without me, you were there with your partner.
Right.
And then she's been on our show twice. This is the first time we're back.
Right. We're back in her.
With pre-podcast game and now with a podcast and an upcoming book.
Yes.
Look at us.
I can't wait. I love her. And she just wrote a book.
Yeah.
And it's book.
She was
book,
on
book.
Our show recently, yeah.
She was.
Yeah.
So
this
exciting.
Episode is with Zachary Zane, who wrote Boy Slut, a memoir and manifesto. He's fucking awesome. We were just talking about his Substack, was it yesterday, on a call?
Yes.
And he
yes.
has these topics that are like, I got paid to have sex with this woman while her man watched, and then he jizzed on his own eyeball.
In his own eyeball. Yes.
That's a terrible example.
Right.
It's probably not what he said, but the topics and the titles are awesome and brilliant.
And this show, when we recorded, when he was on our podcast, it was a couple of months ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
It was so
backlogged.
He was not only so much fun to talk to.
Yeah.
His perspective, he's a genius writer. So yeah. He has the book. He writes, he's been a writer, a columnist for, I think, Men's Health, amongst other publications. So he's been writing for a long time, but he came out with his manifesto not too long ago.
Yeah.
And having him on the show, he's brilliant. And this was a really fun podcast. I wanted to meet him in person.
And he's fucking shameless.
He's
I think his book also talks about the path to get there, because he hasn't always been
right,
but it's so like fits in with Shameless Sex, hence what I just said about some of the titles for his articles. So stay tuned and you will learn some things, also be entertained and inspired. He is absolutely wonderful. Sorry we couldn't release this earlier. Well, I don't know if Zach's going to listen to this, but
I want to say
we had a lot of episodes
one thing
released.
I know so many Zachs, by the way. That's a lot of
I know
Zachs.
It's a great name. I love Zach.
I do too.
I love Zach so much.
Real quick, if y'all aren't checking us out on Instagram, we're doing a it's not a contest. It's for anyone that pre-orders our book. Yes, you get this free workshop that we created, but we're also doing an Instagram. I don't want to call it a contest, but it's like basically you submit anytime you purchase a hardcover.
It's a raffle or something.
It is
right?
A raffle, yeah. But a raffle sounds
it's a
so
huge
weird.
Fucking giveaway.
But you get over $1,000 worth of products from various folks that have sponsored the podcast, but Cozy Earth.
Yeah.
Love.
It's not just sex toys.
No, it's not. It's also there's a Calm premium subscription. You can just go on Instagram and check it out. It's a month countdown to our book release, but it will be over. People love free stuff.
Yeah.
And right now is the time. It's over $1,000 of free stuff.
Good time.
And then
now.
If you only buy one or two copies, you still can get something. But if you buy 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you get 10 different entries.
And the time is now. The pre-sales matter. So everyone, as you have heard, heard our book here. So don't tune out as we talk about this, by the way. Our book is fucking fantastic. It's the book that we wish we had at all ages of our life when we were sexual beings or in relationships. And we'll continue to wish we have it, except that we wrote it, so we have it. But you should probably have it too, in our opinion, whatever, regardless of whatever age you are, 18 to 98, I don't know, 108, whatever age you are.
If you can see.
Yeah, if you can see. Also, there's the audio book. So,
there you go.
Yeah,
there
you can also hear.
No excuses.
Yeah, no excuses. Maybe we'll get it done in Braille somewhere.
Eventually, we'll have a hologram of us and we'll come out and talk to them and show them things. That's future, everyone.
Yes, yes. So if you love us, please, please, please go pre-order our book. It helps to get the book out there to more people. When you order the book, you're basically doing a public service, because when we get on lists for our book based on all the sales, it gets on in more people's feeds or in their threads. Threads, that word?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so people who don't have access to Shameless Sex get access to it. A lot of people need that. So please go and do that. Go to shamelesssex.com. You'll see the link on there. You pre-order the hardcover, please. And then you can also get the audio, but the hardcover is really what helps with the pre-sale campaign.
And it's anywhere books are sold. So if you prefer to order through a different outlet.
Yeah. I ordered from Santa Cruz Bookshop in Santa Cruz.
I ordered bookshop.org. I ordered through Barnes & Noble. I ordered from Amazon. Anywhere that books are sold, you can
We're
find this book.
We're all the waters of the ordering platforms.
We are, but you will find our book everywhere books are sold. So thank you for listening to that.
What do they get if they order it? Only for pre-orders.
Yeah, you get that
special.
You get that very provocative but highly amazing workshop that we made.
Yes.
For free. And then also a bunch of other free stuff if you order it anyway.
Basically, you get a deal if you pre-order, and if you wait till later, you get a great book, but you're not getting all the goodies. So go do it now.
Only for you, that's pre-ordering.
If you really love me, you pre-order.
Yeah, seriously. We're going that direction.
Yeah,
it's true.
I
told my mom, I'm like, how many copies did you order? You clearly don't love me that much. She's like, oh my God. What's wrong with you?
Yeah. I know.
Yeah. That is not in the book.
So we don't talk like that in our book. We teach other forms of communication that you can't find on our podcast, but it's not what we just did. Okay, ready for a sex question?
Yeah.
All right. I have been trying to ask my husband to tell me his fantasies, and he drew a blank. I know he has them because I've walked in on him masturbating, even though we didn't have sex for a while. And note, this isn't how it always is, and we've had great sex over the past week. What do you think I can do to help him tell me what he wants? I am usually shy, but your podcast has opened me up. Pun intended. Woo.
I want to say something because I love this question and also can relate to the dude masturbating.
Because you were that guy.
So I'm like that dude sometimes. But I sometimes will have sex with my partner and orgasm. And then later in the day, my partner will be off doing something. And I'm like, I'm just going to masturbate. And sometimes I'm like, I wonder if he's going to walk in right now.
Does it turn you on even more though?
Kind of. And that's what I'm like, maybe. Because it's not like a shameful thing. I'm like not in the closet baiting. Although sometimes I have the windows open. So I do go in the bathroom and shut the door because I don't want my dog to see.
You bait in the bathroom? You have a big bathroom. So
yeah,
it's a nice bathroom.
This is why.
You don't want your dog to see. Well, my God. Your dog is seeing you banging it out anal.
I know. But it's just sometimes I'm just, when it's just him and I in the house, I'm like, no. He's like, this is my own private time.
I can see my mom doing deep anal, but I can't see her masturbating.
So this clearly isn't about me, this question, but I just want to say I relate and think that perhaps that could be a layer to this person, like to the dynamic.
Maybe.
I don't know, but I know that has happened. And there have been times where my partner was like, did you masturbate? Like, I feel like he feels the motor of my vibrator and it's like, is this thing warm? Is this like the engine is still on?
Or it's like the motor, we turn on and it's like dead. He's like, what have you been doing?
Or there'll be like five charging around the house. He's like, so what went down here?
Yeah. Well, so I love that. I love all that. One thing that came to mind here was, I mean, we talk about this in our book actually. And it's not just us talking about this. We're quoting Dr. Allison Ash and Dr. Justin Laymiller.
Doesn't she hold the record, Dr. Allison Ash, for the most podcasts
on our show?
She's been guested
her
on
and Alicia and Erwan, I would imagine.
I think she may have one up, but not that. I was just thinking that because we love her. She's just so knowledgeable. Yeah.
So there's a chapter in the book that is not just about fantasies, but is about better understanding yourself and also how to communicate about sex, how to also understand navigating fantasies. And I think what we were sharing this is again, how to understand your fantasies and how to share with people. But I think that one of the greatest challenges with those pieces are people are terrified to say, I have a fantasy other than something with you.
Mm.
Or I have a fantasy of something that you might not be into because we've never talked about it. You've never expressed that you're into it. It might be different from what most people are doing. Do you remember the first time someone asked you about your fantasies?
Yeah, I hated that.
The very first time.
Well,
I remember mine.
I mean, I always hated trying to like figure out what I wanted to say.
Ew. And I had an answer.
Oh, okay.
But it was not exciting. It's my terrible example.
What'd you say?
But this is shower sex.
Oh.
I'd only had penetrative sex like 3 times. And my partner at the time, the one that the ex-boyfriend that was like my childhood best friend who like broke up with me a week after we both we had sex. We had never had sex before with anyone and had sex, and he broke up with me a week later. But he was like, do you have any fantasies? We're so actually now I think about it, like, good for him.
That
for
actually
asking.
Is a quite an advanced question for a teenager.
And I was like, I think having sex in the shower. And now
I think
I'm like,
also
I don't
great
like
that
sex.
You could say that though.
Oh, I kind of knew that for some reason. I don't know why that was like arousing, but I think now I'm like, sex in the shower, that's like small potatoes, but it's different for everyone. And so my advice here is, instead of asking the big bold question like, do you have any fantasies? It's a huge leap. First of all, buy our book so you can have more advice on how to deal with this, because it goes way in depth beyond us. But start with small things, not just like, tell me what your fantasies are. And in fact, I would say lead by example. Like, hey, I listened to this podcast. I talked about something that's really hot. And I've noticed I've been kind of like thinking about it when we're having sex or when I'm touching myself or just like daydreaming, and it kind of turns me on. What do you think about it? Do you have anything that you think about? So you kind of like give an example, but don't go to the big leap of like gangbangs, you know, or whatever, or like double penetration. Maybe it's just like, I don't know, being watched, you know, us having sex and someone watching, like some sort of exhibitionist or voyeur sex. And then you're kind of planting the seed and leading the way. And you can't pressure them, though. You can't be like, I just asked you I told you what I want, and then asked you what you want, or what I'm into, what you're into. And now you're not sharing with me. I'll end with this, because maybe you can also do some like light probing things. Like, well, what about this? Do you ever fantasize about this? Like, does anal turn you on? So what I want to say about this is, when you buy our book, you get our online workshop. And we went, a hilarious thing that happened in our online workshop. We're filming it in lingerie in your apartment. And April's like, I hope the doorbell doesn't ring. It'd be super rare because it like never rings. Of course, mid shoot, the doorbell rings. Your dog's barking. I'm like massaging
it. It all went to hell for a minute.
But
I was
we
like
kept
trying
it in
to
there
because
it's hilarious. Because it's like, all just organic.
Well, I think I had a sign for something, which was why it never happened. So I had to run down there. And I was like, hi.
Did you put like a robe on or something?
Yeah, I put a robe on. And that
so
dude
we're
was like
keeping
yo.
It in the video. We're keeping it in.
Yeah.
To show that shit happens. Okay, anyways, what
it
do you have to say?
Well, so I just want to reference some podcast episodes, because we have done quite a few, which is also... you've mentioned the book a few times, Amy, but we did kind of make like just concise versions about fantasies, about how to drop in and not only voice yours, how do you ask for what you want in the bedroom, which is a great chapter. But there's a lot of content on fantasies, because fantasies are fun and you can explore them. So there's episode, you talked about Allison Ash. I do that every time. Allison.
Like Sean Connery.
Yeah, Sean Connery. So episode 253, keeping it hot with fantasies. And then also there's the episode with Dr. Justin Leigh Miller, who he's one of the leading researchers on the science of fantasies. And we had him on the show. It's episode 98. Think
and
about
they're
how
both
long
in our book. Too,
they're,
yeah.
And they're both in our book. Mm-hmm. So if you want to tap into learning about that before the book comes out, because you can pre-order, but you might not get it in time to learn about your fantasies right now, you can access these episodes in the meantime.
Yeah.
And it is difficult to speak to your fantasies if you aren't good at speaking to what you want, or your partner isn't, because it sounds like you want to know what he wants. You could ask for each of you to write down some things and then share them together. Mm-hmm. So it's very, it could be very personalized and also safer, that it can feel like you have this intimate sharing of fantasy evening. Yeah. And remember, you don't have to act out. Fantasies don't ever mean that this is what you want to happen.
Right. They can, but they don't have to mean that.
And sometimes you might be in the midst of having a fantasy that's lived out, and then you realize that, whoa, this is awkward and I don't want to do this at all. This is not my fantasy.
I have fantasies of non-consensual acts of sexual violence. I don't want that to happen.
The step fantasy. Yeah. I never want that to happen ever.
The taxi cab thing, though? Come on. I think you want that to happen.
It's
diverse. And that, again, that's in our book. Absolutely. And that what Dr. Justin Leigh Miller and Allison Ash say is, like, and so maybe that's another reason why your partner is not sharing.
And Midori. Midori talked about role play and fantasies too.
They don't have to overlap. And so maybe your partner doesn't want to share them because they're like, you'll think that I definitely want to do this, or it's super fucked up or something. And, you know, your spank bank is your spank bank. What happens in our minds is ours. It's what we do within the outside world that can get a little tricky because we have to deal with consent, boundaries, respecting other humans. But your spank bank, you get wild. If I told you about the dream that I had last night, you would be probably like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
You talked about it on the Double Teamed podcast. So tune into that.
So just tune into that because you'll hear about it. And that's just my brain. It doesn't mean I'm actually going to go do the thing that I want to do the thing, but I got turned on by it. My brain's wild. Okay.
That's the beauty about human brains. It's our largest sex organ.
Good luck to you.
I love that. I know. I like the pun too. And I like that they said pun intended.
Yeah.
Has opened me up.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
thank you. You're welcome for opening you up. Stay open.
And thank
you. Only at the right times.
All right. You ready for the bio?
Yes.
Zachary Zane is a Brooklyn-based columnist, sex expert, and activist whose work focuses on sexuality, culture, and the LGBTQ community. He is the author of Boy Slut, a memoir and manifesto, and co-author of Men's Health, Best Sex Ever. And his work has been featured in the New York Times, Rolling Stone, Washington Post, Playboy, and so many more. To learn more, go to ZacharyZane.com.
All right, everyone, it is interview time, and we are here with a new guest, but we are so excited, I should say. I don't know why there's a butt in there. I mean, I like a butt, but not that kind of butt. And we're so excited with Zachary Zane, author of Boy Slut, a Memoir and Manifesto. And I love Zachary. Could we call you Zachary? Going Zachary.
Zach is fine. I think we can say Zach. We're there.
Zachary Zane. I like the name though. Zachary Zane sounds good.
Right.
Zachary.
That's why I do it.
Yeah.
Double Z.
All right. We're gonna call you Zachary. Zachary Zane. I might say your whole name the whole time, like your full name, because it just sounds awesome. And his book is incredible. And while it is a memoir, it's also very informative, educational. You can walk away with so many different pieces on how to live life. And maybe it's a slutty way, maybe it's a shameless way, which put both of us together. Hey. In that one, shameless plug. Yeah, there's so many fun, wonderful pieces there. And we are going to learn all about them. And you already heard a little bit about Zachary Zane in the intro, but Zachary Zane, can you please tell us us and our listeners a little bit more about how you got to where you are today in the field of sexuality?
So originally, actually, I thought I was going to get a PhD in clinical psychology. I was working at Harvard Medical Center as a smoking cessation researcher and counselor, so figuring out the best way to get people to quit smoking cigarettes. I took my GRE. I was ready to apply to grad school. I had a panic attack. I was like, for this seemingly altruistic profession, they are cutthroat, they are nasty, they steal your work. Oh. And then it's like 6 years of a PhD, 3 years of postdoc, and then you just write grants until you die. And I'm like, this actually sounds terrible. I hate this. So I started writing a little bit. I was like writing fiction at my desk, and I wrote a novel that I'm terrified to look at because I was 22 and I'm sure it's god awful. But I learned, like, in order to get like an agent and to get it sold, you had to write other things for the websites. So I wrote a piece for ExoJane, if you remember that site.
I don't know.
Would give you like $50 for you to like bare your soul. And it had this like faux feminist lens. So it would literally be like the most outrageous titles possible, where it'd be like, I got an abortion and used the umbilical cord to strangle my husband and danced on his grave. Yay, feminism. And you're
oh my God.
Fuck? Like, what?
Wow.
But I wrote a piece for them, And what they titled it was, I came out as bisexual and can't date anyone gay or straight. Mm-hmm. And what the article was about was how I really struggled to embrace my bisexuality. And then finally, once I did, I thought the world was going to be my oyster. I thought, you know, all women would love to date me and all gay men would love to date me. And I had a rude awakening. Women would not date me. They were so afraid I was using the label as a stepping stone on the way to being, you know, full-blown gay, and they were afraid I was going to leave them. And then gay men were just extremely condescending. They'd be like, oh, honey, I was bi too. You'll get there. And I'm like, oh, fuck you. Like, absolutely not. Then I fell in love with this bi woman, and like, it was just incredible to feel so accepted, so embraced, so understood. She wasn't worried I was going to leave her for a man. I wasn't worried about appearing too effeminate or checking out a guy or like having to be someone that I'm not. So I wrote this piece and it went viral in a way that I was not expecting. And it's because at the time there was such a dearth of bisexual content. And the bi content, and this is almost a decade ago now, and the bi content that was out was 10 things to never say to a bisexual person or 10 myths about bisexuality. It was bi content to convince gay and straight people that we exist. It wasn't actually bi content for other bi people. So after this went viral, actually we started getting work to write about bisexuality, my experience with it. And I started writing content like by a bi person for bi people. So like how to deal with internalized biphobia, how to date as a bi person. When can you call yourself bi? You know, the intersection of bisexuality and polyamory. And there was also very little male bisexuality being written about at the time. So I really just became known as the bi guy. Mm-hmm. And just like blew up from that. And from that, I kind of expanded out. So I was talking about, you know, predominantly bisexuality in the beginning, then just all queer sexuality, then male sexuality. And now just, you know, I have the sex and relationship advice column at Men's Health. I have the non-monogamy column at Cosmo. You know, I speak to all genders, sexualities, all ages. But it really started with the niche being bisexual and then kind of going out from there.
Love it. And you're such a gifted writer, and clearly we love your book.
Thank you.
It's great. Check out Boys Let Everyone. That we'll say that many times. So we want to go through with you your own personal journey. We talked a little bit about it before we started recording, a step-by-step process towards embodying your ultimate sexual self, because this is therapy, right? But can we start with the first chapters of the book, which am I a sex obsessed pervert, and am I addicted to porn?
Yeah, sure. So let's start. Yeah, also, I have to admit, I love the titles that I came up with for each chapter. I do take a lot of pride in them. I love coming up with a good, raunchy, ridiculous title. But the idea of, so am I sex obsessed pervert? Wow, tongue twister. Is I really wanted to explain in that chapter how universal sex negativity is, and like and Puritan culture is, and how insidious it is. Because often I'd read these books, a lot of like queer memoirs, and it's always like a little gay boy from the South who gets kicked out of his family for being gay, grew up in a really Christian environment, and had that level of clear sexual shame and internalized homophobia. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense why you have it. I grew up with two liberal parents, like liberal Jews in Los Angeles. I had gay uncles on both sides of my family, my dad's brother, my mom's brother. I knew it was A-okay to be gay. We were a family where we'd see each other naked. It was not the end of the world. Like, nudity was okay. And still, I had such sexual shame. And so the first chapter is, I'm 8 years old. I'm in therapy, and I'm struggling with imagining people naked. And this is part of kind of my OCD. This is one of my obsessions with, I have OCD. But it was kind of ruining my life. I would just imagine everyone naked. And it wasn't because I was attracted to them. It was because I thought thinking of people naked is bad. And because I tried not to do it, then I was doing it. So I'm in therapy and crying because I'm imagining my therapist naked in front of me as I'm telling him, I'm imagining you naked. And he's explaining to me, like, nudity is not bad. Like, only once you believe that will you stop having these obsessions. But yeah, so it was really important for me to explain that, like, essentially this book is for everyone. Yes, it's predominantly for, you know, bisexuals, queers, faggots, alternatives, polyamorous people, kinksters. Like, yes, definitely people on the outskirts, it's more for you. But it really was to illustrate that we all have a negative relationship with sex, unless if you've worked to unlearn that, or unless if you live in like a polyamorous commune in the middle of nowhere without Wi-Fi and is like, you know, broken away from the rest of the world, maybe you don't have sexual shame. But the rest of us, if you exist in this world, you do. So I really wanted to set that from the beginning to be like, okay, we all struggle with this. And here was my journey to reaching a plate of embracing my sexuality and no longer being worried if I'm a sex-obsessed pervert.
So did you discover you're not addicted to porn? And
yeah,
you're,
right.
You're not.
So oh, it's not the first chapter. The second chapter. So porn, I mean, the reason also why I start with these things is because the book is like a memoir. It is somewhat chronological, right? So that explains that as well. And porn was something I discovered, you know, 12, 13, which is, I think the average age people see porn now is like 11, which is horrifying.
It may be younger now, Jesus.
Yeah, yeah, it might be younger now. Turns out I'm not addicted to porn. who would have thought? And it's so funny because, you know, I knew how many people struggle with porn or are worried that they are addicted to porn because of my column at Men's Health and like the number of questions I get about being afraid that they have a porn addiction. And the thing is, porn can have a negative impact on your life. I'm not saying it doesn't, right? And I feel like, and I address this in the book, where it's sometimes, you know, obviously conservatives and religious zealots are like, all porn is terrible. It's all exploitation. It's awful. It's blah, blah, blah. And then you have very liberals and progressives who are so afraid to admit that porn could potentially have a negative impact on your life because they know that religious zealots and conservatives are going to manipulate their words. So they're like, oh, like porn is not bad in any way, shape, or form. And I'm like, well, okay, like porn can have a negative impact on your life, and it should behoove you to analyze your relationship with porn. If you're, you know, late to places because you're jerking off, if you're jerking off at work, if you no longer want to have sex with your wife, if you can't get hard because you're jerking off all the time. And again, there's been like a lot of studies that show like it's not necessary that porn like induces erectile dysfunction, but it can contribute to it in like various ways of being like, obviously, like getting anxiety about not being good at sex, not being big enough. You get so used to having, you know, one-on-one sex can be very different when you're with someone else. But yeah, I think we all watch porn. It is such a controversial topic. And I wanted to have a really nuanced take being like, hey, porn can be an incredible thing in your life. It's a way to, you know, have release, to explore different fantasies, to learn new things. However, remember that it is fantasy. Mm-hmm. It is not real. Like this is not how real people have sex. And you don't need to feel any shame about watching porn. You're allowed to enjoy your desires. If you see that, okay, this might be interfering with my romantic relationships, doesn't mean porn is bad. Just take a step back. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, agreed. I think that's, I say this to April sometimes, like, I think that porn's the reason why we have a job, to help people to undo a lot of the stuff that's come with it, from the shame to the trauma to all these different ideas.
Unrealistic expectations. Yeah.
Yeah. How we should be as sexual beings or even romantic beings. And you know, we love porn as for entertainment, and but mm-hmm. not as an educator. And there is exactly. educational porn out there that's awesome, like Tristan Tormino's work. Love all that stuff. Like, love mm-hmm. that. And Jessica Drake has some.
Nina Hartley, too.
Yeah. But a lot of. And where
Make Love, Not Porn.
Right.
Yeah, it's too, still like, which is just more realistic. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
It's, so you can still watch it and get turned on. It can be super hot and heavy. And yet it still is like, is educational, informative, in trying to be as realistic as it can be.
I can get turned up in PG-13 movies sometimes. Like,
I mean, you know my thing with Melrose Place back in the day. Okay.
Exactly.
That's where I learned about my rape fantasies. So, and I was 10.
Or acts of sexual violence.
Yeah.
Time for a quick break so we can tell you about our carefully chosen sponsors.
Please stay tuned and buy their products, because we only tell you about what we love and what we truly believe in, and it helps keep this podcast free to you.
Yeah, I totally agree with all that. And I'm similar to you in that I grew up, I wouldn't say my whole household was liberal, because my dad certainly wasn't, but he just didn't give a fuck about me in general for the most part. So he wasn't really interfering with my sex life or dating life. But my mom was really progressive, yet I still grew up ashamed. And I think it was more so from media and peers and the people I was starting to have sex
teachers,
with.
Teachers, yeah.
All the things, all these, like you said, if you're in a bubble, maybe on some commune, then you're fine. But the rest of us, even if you had the most progressive upbringing in your home, it doesn't mean that the outside world won't get to you. So I love exactly. all of that.
It also could be stored in your DNA from generational yeah. trauma, which there's new studies emerging all the time about how there's at least four generations of trauma that we can store. And who knows if that shows up with
Jesus.
I don't even want to look back at that, yeah. But I will. I'll go to our hypnotist. We have a great hypnotist here. Yes. She's wonderful. Okay. So, cause we're kind of moving in like the order of your book. Okay. Mm-hmm. Moving to the next section here, there's this where's my light bulb moment experience that you're talking about. And I'm curious, what is the where's my light bulb experience all about? And what happened when you finally had your light bulb experience? Is that like an aha?
Yeah. So the light bulb experience is that aha moment. And in the context I discuss it is, you know, there have been rumors about me being gay for so long. I knew I'd loved women. So I'm like, I'm not gay. I didn't think bisexuality was real. You know, at the time, there was very little bisexual visibility. But I decided, well, you know, my first week of college, and I purposely went to college 3,000 miles away from home because I think I needed to explore. And I knew that subconsciously I can't be close to my family and friends. And I didn't want rumors to get back to my temple or synagogue or whatever the fuck. But like, so my first week of college, I hooked up with a guy and I had to get so drunk in order to do so. Actually, while in the middle of him blowing me, I left to go vomit twice middle of it. Like I was like blacked out. Like I was really hammered. But the thing is, I really expected when I made out with a guy or kissed a guy that I would know instantaneously, I would have this light bulb moment where I'm like, oh my God, this is what real love is and attraction is. And every time I've hooked up with a woman, no, that wasn't real. That was fake. Now I understand what love and attraction desire are. I'm definitely gay. Or I would hook up with a guy and be like, yeah, no, this is clearly not for me. I am not enjoying this. I'm straight. And so I just was really hoping to have a level of clarity. And that didn't happen at all. And it didn't happen for a few reasons. Number one, I was so drunk. I couldn't even be present in the moment. Number two, I'd put so much pressure on this experience that I couldn't even I couldn't even focus on whether I was enjoying it or not. You know, I was like, does this make me gay? Does this make me straight? Am I liking this? Am I liking this? So like, I couldn't get out of my head, which was, you know, then the point of drinking, but then I had to get so drunk in order to do it. It was really disappointing. And then for like 5 years, I would get hammered and hook up with guys. And like, at the time, I was still having sex with and dating a ton of women. They were aware of my shenanigans, and I kind of was very confused. I was very confused for a long period of time. And again, like, it's people sometimes ask, like, how did you not realize you were bisexual? And I'm like, there was no bisexual visibility. There was not a single, like, I did not know a single out bi man. Not one. Every bi guy I knew in college came out as gay shortly after. So even though I am egocentric, I'm not delusional. You know what I mean? I'm like, I can't be the only fucking bi guy in the entire world. You know what I mean? But like, and that's why, you know, visibility really is so important, realizing that you're not alone. And obviously there are millions upon millions of bi people fucking everywhere, right? Like, but so that's why it was so challenging for me to embrace it. And eventually kind of what ended up happening, there were a few things that happened. I remember talking to my brother after college, and he was like, Zach, you know, like you know, I hooked up with a few guys in college. I think our other brother did too. Realized it wasn't for me. You know, exploring is completely normal. You've been doing this for like half a decade. Like at some point you might not be exploring. At some point, that's like a permanent orientation, maybe. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna be married to my husband and our 40th anniversary. I'll be like, thank you for staying with me as I explore my sexuality. Thank you for marrying me, a straight man. Like I'm like, oh God. So I got into therapy, specifically sought out an LGBTQ therapist. I kind of gave him this monologue on my first session about how I'm confused. On the second session, I started the monologue again and goes, Zach, you know, when we say confused in the LGBTQ like therapeutic setting, it actually means something. You don't seem confused. You seem very clearly bisexual. Like, is there something I'm missing right now? And I quickly responded, oh, that shit doesn't exist in men. And he responded, Zach, you're too smart to think that. Ooh. Which was such like a good ego jab too, to like, you know, critique my intellect in that way. Like in the way, like, come on, of course fucking bisexuality exists. It would be insane if it didn't exist in this world, right?
That's a good therapist right there. I like that therapist right there in that moment of just like, let me like kind of poke you a little bit to get you thinking. Yeah.
And then from that, all of a sudden I was like bisexuality became an option. in a way that it was not before. And I'm actually stealing this option language from Fritz Klein, who's this very famous kind of like Kinsey-like researcher who studied bisexuality and has a book called like The Bisexual Option. So I want to give him this credit. And he actually has a kind of a much more nuanced Kinsey scale that's called the Fritz Klein Sexual Orientation Grid that kind of looks at bisexuality and sexual fluidity in a much more nuanced way, which is worth checking out if you're interested. So initially, when I started like kind of embracing bisexuality, I thought I was like bi-sexual but heteroromantic, which means I can fuck anyone of all genders, but I could only date and have romantic attraction towards women. And while that is a valid orientation, that was not mine. For me, it was just internalized biphobia and me not willing to embrace that I could love a man. And then the way I finally eventually had my light bulb moment, so to speak, is I was actually in Provincetown visiting my gay uncles. And Provincetown, for people who are not aware, is on the tip of Cape Cod in Massachusetts. And it is this gay liberal bubble, but it's like it's this gay beach town. Everyone there is fucking gay. And so it's incredible when you're closeted to be there and to see all these guys holding hands with other guys making out on the street, lesbians doing the same thing too, in a way that you don't ever exist in a space where like the majority of people are same-sex couples embracing love, not afraid to kiss. I live in New York. I don't know if you just saw, but a man was murdered yesterday.
I saw that. Yeah.
Oh, I see that. Oh my God.
He's like voguing in the parking lot or something.
For literally voguing at a gas station.
Yeah.
And this gay man was murdered and stabbed to death. Yeah. Like it is not safe in New York. It is not safe anywhere in the United States. Hate crimes happen all the time. So like, yes, when I hold hands with a man, I'm looking over my shoulder. I'm living in fear. Even though I'm a 6'4 dude, I've been attacked. I've been yelled at. I've been called a faggot. People have tried to hit me with their cars. Like this is a real thing that happens. Everyone's like, oh, New York is so safe. I'm like, it is safer. But no, it's not so safe. It is not safe to be a queer person existing in this world, anywhere in the fucking world. But that's why places like Provincetown are so special, so incredible. And you could see this in a way where people living without fear, people embracing same-sex intimacy. And while I was there, end up having this whirlwind 24-hour, like, I thought I was hooking up with this guy, and all of a sudden I had these, like, emotions, and I knew it wasn't love, but it was just like, you know when you have those, like, vacation boyfriends, and you kind of, like, allow yourself to pretend it's love because you know you're going your separate ways at the end of this, so why not just be real with each other and vulnerable, and you know it's going to end, and you kind of can have this fake but beautiful relationship. Well, I don't want to call it fake, but temporary, I'll say, relationship. So I kind of had this whirlwind experience with this man that made me realize that I have the capacity to actually love another man.
Nice.
That's awesome.
I think the perspective that you're providing is so important because, okay, the biphobia thing is real. So I used to say, and I've been in relationships with people that have vulvas, and I never identified as a lesbian, but I also said I was bi curious, which we were corrected actually by someone on the show because I had said that I wasn't honoring being bisexual.
Wasn't it heteroflexible that was the issue, not bi curious?
It was heteroflexible. Okay, yeah. So that was it. So
it was that heteroflexible is a privilege because you get the identity of being mostly heterosexual, but you have the ability to go, and then it makes it bi people more invisible. I think.
Okay. Regardless, I still felt
that's
like I
take.
Was. It's an interesting perspective, and I stopped saying heteroflexible after that. And also, I recognized for myself that this evolution of your sexuality and my orientation, yes, was experiential. And I remember when I was in relationships with particularly one woman and in my early 20s, I remember being like, but I'm not lesbian. And it was hard for me like to wrap my head around the labeling that goes on and that there was this fluidity that can happen inside of hooking up with people that have, you know, the similar parts to you. And I grew up in a conservative family. Unlike some folks, it wasn't really okay for me, I think, to, in my opinion, and maybe now I can ask my mom, but she knows that I had like plenty of curiosity and exploration with women now. But what I'm saying is to have it from the flip side, from your perspective, is really important because a lot of folks, I think they could go through life maybe being curious about exploring other people that maybe aren't the opposite sex. And I hate that term, but the opposite, where they're like, well, this is what I'm supposed to do. And I think for me, I can relate to what you're speaking too, because I've been in that space and for a long time where I felt like I was confused. I was like, oh, well, maybe, like, I remember hooking up with we were together for probably about a year, but closeted. And I remember being like, I just want a cock. I just miss the cock. And I'm like, so maybe this isn't what I'm. And then I remember hooking up with dudes later on and being like, I just miss like the feminine touch. So it's like, what's wrong with me almost was what I was going through.
I have to be one or the other.
I know, because it's so black and white to me at the time.
I have something pretty similar to that. Wait, hold on. I have a section of my book where I kind of do a Q&A where it's kind of a divergence from the rest of like the strict memoir format, but it's called Oh, So You Think You're Bisexual, in quotes. Mm-hmm. And it's about all the comments and questions I've received when I've told people that I'm bisexual, how I have responded and how I wish I have responded.
I have one other thing I want to say to that, because I think that culturally, at least I'll speak to the United States or like the Western US, it is more, I'm doing air quotes, appropriate or you know, socially common or thought to be common.
Acceptable
for women, for vulva owners to be bi.
Yeah.
To like have, you want to hook up with other women. Whereas for men, it's a little more like, okay, that must make him gay. Like that still exists. That's still like a thing.
Absolutely. How many heterosexual relationships? I know I've been with so many dudes that are like, I'll have a threesome if it's with another
dude.
But no other dudes. And I'm and like, why not?
That's a fucking double standard. Yes. What makes you think, yeah, no, come on. Yeah,
it's so funny and it's so interesting when the number of people who like, okay, so I just broke up with my partner, but we're still, she and I are on good terms. It's fine. But I remember when we first started dating, I asked her like, oh, are you bi? And she's like, no, I'm not bi. And then as we started dating, she spoke about like the many women that she has dated and loved and fucked. and literally I'm like, so you're clearly bisexual. And totally. she goes like, oh, I guess so. like in a way where like, she's like, you know, like I always saw myself kind of marrying a guy. So like, it just didn't like register to me. I'm like, you were in love with this woman still. It's been like 5 years. And she's like, no, I'm definitely bisexual. That makes sense. And I've had guy friends too, where it is funny when they're like, you know, because they're more likely to hook up with women. But like a friend of mine who I had to tell him, I'm like, yeah, like most straight men, like don't get drunk and fuck other guys. That's usually just not what straight men do. I'm like, that's bisexual. He goes like, oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. But like in a way where they're doing this and it doesn't even register at times. And I think a lot of it is because this idea that bisexuality is 50-50. There's this idea that
perfect
like
50-50.
Perfect 50-50, or because you're like, oh, I see myself potentially marrying a man or a woman, whatever it is, or I want my long-term partner to be of a different gender, like, or the opposite sex, whatever the fucking word you want to use. But like, therefore I'm not bisexual. I'm being like, no, you still very much are bisexual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think this is the realization. And I love that you're bringing this to the surface, to the people out there, to normalize bisexuality, right? It's an important thing. And so I had a question. I was just relating.
Who's going to ask?
Did you find it in your book?
Oh, no, I stopped looking. But hold on. It has to be. I know where it is in the section. Like, it has to be one of these two places. Wait, hold on. Okay, keep talking. I'm going to find it. Now I'm inspired.
Well, if you can multitask, I do. I have a question because you did talk about therapy. And so here's the question. Sex and relationships is fucking complicated, and as is life a lot of times, and they can be difficult to sort of navigate sex and relationships. And if therapy isn't helping, what does someone do? What do you do?
Yeah, when you're like maybe the relationship with the therapist or all the work you've done, you're like, I'm stuck still.
I'm confused. I don't understand what, like, I want to label myself as something or maybe not. What do you think?
You fire your therapist?
Yeah.
That would be the first thing I'd say. I actually am someone who's a fan of changing therapists once every couple of years. Mm-hmm. I feel like often, and especially you can do so sooner if you're still learning and growing with that therapist, but they have their one perspective. They have this day of you. They have their one approach. But if I remember I left my last therapist being like, hey, I feel like for the last 6 months, I've literally had the same issues. You've kind of given the same responses and I feel very stuck right now. So I'm looking for a different approach. Mm-hmm. So if you are still struggling and you feel like you keep having the same exact conversations with your therapist in various different ways, then it, again, doesn't mean they're a bad therapist, but it just might be like, okay, they've done everything they can for you and try to find someone else, try a different approach, you know, try cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectical therapy, whatever the millions types of therapies
are. So many of them. Yeah.
So I think, yeah, absolutely see a new therapist. And I'm someone who, yeah, really after 2 years, I tried to see a new one to be like, okay, I even if it's good, I'm like, I need a new perspective. I need this. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's tough. It's always good to, if you're kind of stuck in your relationships and sex or whatever it is, to kind of go back and look and see your patterns of behavior, right? You know, especially for someone who's struggling with relationships and everything seems to fail. And you're like, you are the common denominator, right? You are, yeah. You are the person of what it is. I think it's always good to also seek advice from friends. The best advice I get in my life is not from my therapist. It is from my friends who know me incredibly well, who are very thoughtful, who are kind of more honest and blunt with me, and reaching out, being like, hey, I'm struggling with X, Y, Z, whether it's my sexuality, like, what are your thoughts? Like, you know me well. And so like going out seeking advice, of course, reading as much as humanly possible. There's so much information out there about sexuality, relationships, attachment style, non-monogamy, kinks, whatever it is. Read Boy Slut, A Memoir and Manifesto. But like, you know, there's just so much information out there. So it's like, okay, like learn about yourself is kind of the best thing that you can do.
Yeah. And it's endless. April, we were actually just recorded earlier today with someone that we both worked with as our therapist during relationship issues. And it was, you know, we're dedicated to constantly learning. And we talk about sex and relationships as if we know everything, but we also say that we don't know everything because we have our own struggles. We've been on the show before where April and I are like, oh, I fucked up, or I'm confused now, or I'm so heartbroken, I don't know what to do. So it's like being a forever student of yourself. And sometimes that means like finding different teachers to work with.
And not just talk therapy all the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes talk therapy can be...
I love talk therapy because it's so easy for me, because I could just go blah, 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 and I could do that all day.
But it's like, that's not necessarily always going to help you get to another level or the next phase. Not that you need to be like gaming and trying to get to level 16.
And
it is important.
And I've had some really great talk therapists. Like, and I get the tools, but then I will hit the time of like, I think every other work here is done, and that's totally fine.
Time for a quick break to talk about one of our sponsors who just so happens to be our absolute favorite lube, Uberlube. Uberlube is a luxurious silicone lubricant, and it enhances intimacy. It's there when you want it, and it blends in when you're done with it, so you have control over that lube. It's long-lasting and leaves the skin extra velvety, and honestly, y'all, I want it all over my body. Thousands of doctors in the U.S. are recommending Uberlube to their patients. It's body-friendly, less likely to change the pH, and it has vitamin E, so it feels extra moisturizing.
There's a reason why we've been a fan of Uberlube for years. There's no flavor or scent. It's even great for oral sex, everyone. But it's not just great for sex. You can use it for massage, your hair, you can prevent chafing. It even brings out the colors of your beautiful tattoos. And the bottle is absolutely gorgeous. It looks more like a cosmetic, so you can leave it anywhere shamelessly for easy access. Just go to uberlube.com and use the discount code SHAMELESS10 to get 10% off and free shipping. Again, that's uberlube.com right now with code SHAMELESS10 for 10% off and free shipping. This podcast is also brought to you by OMGS.com. Join over 1 million people who are experiencing more pleasure with OMGS. They take scientific research of thousands of vulva owners, showing techniques to pleasure that pussy. They turn this research into tasteful, educational short videos, animated modules, and infographics. OMGS is for anyone who wants to learn about vulva pleasure or take it to the next level. Want to take your orgasms from good to out of this world? Then check out OMGS. Or if you're a vulva lover and want to up your pussy pleasuring skills, then you need to check out OMGS.
I've personally been recommending OMGS to my clients for years, and it's completely changed their lives. They have three seasons: external pleasure, internal pleasure, and sex toys. It's not a subscription service, and you don't need to download a thing. OMGS also makes a fabulous gift, and your purchase supports more pleasure research. So just go to omgs.com/shameless to get 10% off right now. Again, that's omgs.com/shameless to receive 10% off, unlimited access towards enhancing your pleasure power. The link is in the episode's description.
Okay, so it looks like he found it. Okay, tell us more.
So I found it, and this was now in reference to kind of April, what you're saying about how like, oh, I'm with a woman and I sometimes miss dick, or I'm with a man and I miss a feminine touch. And so, you know, I'm not sure exactly what this means. Does this mean I'm bisexual? Does it mean I'm not liking it? Whatever it is. So this is, yeah, in the chapter where I'm answering the questions that people continuously ask of me and also breaking them down a little bit. So a common question I get is, are you equally attracted to men and women? And here's my response. So first and foremost, this question excludes non-binary people. The correct way to ask this question is, are you equally attracted to all genders? The short answer is, I don't know. The long answer is, there's so much that goes into attraction that it's challenging to quantify and parse out. Compared to other bi and pan people I know, I seem to be more equally attracted to all genders, at least if you're looking at my body count, which I don't recommend. While I really don't have a preference for a specific gender, I can tell you that regardless of gender, I know what I'm attracted to. I like them thick, whether that be your breasts, your ass, your dick, or your arms. Yes, I know my attractions are a tad bit basic. However, when I sleep with a ton of men, I notice that I miss sleeping with women. And when I'm sleeping with lots of women, I miss men. When I haven't slept with trans or non-binary people, I miss them. And when I haven't boned a goth self-proclaimed bimbo or short king, I miss them too. Essentially, I'm missing everyone all the time. I don't think about this question often because I don't glean anything from the answer. Let's say I am slightly more attracted to women than men. So what? The only pertinent thing is if I find you attractive. It doesn't matter if I'm typically attracted to another gender more. What matters is if I want to jump your bones here and now. So then I say how I've responded to this question. I'm pretty 50-50, though sometimes I find myself more attracted to men and other times more attracted to women. How I wish I responded, I'm not sure, but what I do know is I want to fuck you.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I love that. I really do.
I have a question from what you just shared. Because you were saying, you know, bisexual, pan, and you're saying you're actually can be attracted to all genders. And so to you, what is the difference between being bisexual and pan?
Oh, I talk about this kind of a lot in the book, actually, because I think there's a lot of confusion even among bi and pan people. Mm-hmm. So I'm bisexual and I'm attracted to people of all genders. To me, bisexuality does not perpetuate a gender binary. It is not exclusive of trans or non-binary people. I think there was this idea that because bi meant two, it meant like, you know, like genders, men and women.
Hence
and
I'm my like, opposite sex. I was being cheeky, but absolutely.
It's so clear when we had the word bisexual, we didn't have the nuanced understanding of gender that we do now. The people who came up with bisexual were not like, but fuck non-binary people. We're not including them. It was just like, this is the word that we had. And so for me, I really resonate with this word. I identify as it, as opposed to pan, because everyone knows what that means. What bi means, like, as a word, versus like, I write for Men's Health. I have a lot of guys in their 50s and 60s who read my work, who search through me through Googling bisexual. They don't even know what the word pansexual means. They would not be able to find my work. The word bisexual kind of has this rich legacy, you know, the LGBT community, you know, Marsha P. Johnson, Sylvia Rivera, these are bi activists. I want to honor them. And so if you want to identify as pan, identify however you see fit. But I think this is just a word that we can rally behind. It is an umbrella term. It is an inclusive term. It's a word that people mean. And I don't necessarily know if we need, you know, 10 million, you know, there's ambisexual, pansexual, polysexual, sexually fluid, sexually, like, and so for me, it's like, okay, I want to have a word that everyone knows and means, and it's very all encompassing for me.
Yeah, but it's up to you to decide what works for
when
you.
When I think of pansexual, exactly. I think of the energy, right? That's what I think. So, you're attracted to energy. That's what I always consider so pansexual. Now, am I wrong?
So again, there are different definitions. That's, now kind of what's happening is bisexuality means you're attracted to people because of gender.
Okay.
Versus pansexuality means you're attracted to people regardless of gender.
That's how I feel about my sexuality. I feel like it doesn't matter what you're rocking between your legs.
I'm attracted to it. I'm attracted to masculinity. I'm attracted to femininity. I'm attracted to androgyny. I'm attracted to all body parts. So it's not a lack of attraction. It's not that I don't care. It's that I actually love all of it. So that in that way, bisexuality would make more sense, as opposed to pansexuality wouldn't actually make sense for me.
Yeah. I love hearing all these different perspectives here or ways of approaching this, because ultimately we get to decide. No one else gets to decide what my orientation is. Like, you know, you don't get to tell me like you're this because you did this. I get to decide that for myself. And yes, I will abide by consent. Doesn't mean I get to touch whoever I want to, but I get to decide what label I want to take on. Like when my mom decided she was going to start dating women in her, I think she was like 60, she didn't want a label. So she had no label. She's just dating women now.
Because labels are for food.
Yeah, labels. Yeah, that's in our book. Labels are for food. And then my mom then was like, okay, I'm bisexual. And no, sorry, it was queer before bisexual. And then so it was queer. And then it was bisexual. And now I think she's just kind of hanging out with no label again. And that's awesome because, you know, good for her. And that's up to her to decide. And I think more people not should, but could embrace that more, especially if you feel like you are, your sexuality is more fluid. Not everyone is moving through sexuality in a really, I mean, we're all fluid in some way, but like you're not, maybe your orientation is not shifting a lot. You know, I identify as like annoyingly, painfully straight. And you have attraction to women, but when it comes to touching them, I'm like, feels like I'm 16 again and hooking up with a guy I'm not into. And they could be like drop dead gorgeous and dominant, because I'm into dominant submission stuff. And still I'm like, what the fuck? It'd be so awesome. Because we're like, oh, yeah. Anyways, that's just me. So I want to bring forward though, to another part of your book.
Let's go. Let's keep moving along here.
We can't help but ask about Don't Be Gay, Just Shove It Up Your Ass.
Great title.
And a great title. And the next one's also great. A Peg for Every Hole. Please
great,
elaborate.
Fabulous. also fabulous. So those are like starting to get into my kink chapters, right? So Don't Be Gay, Just Shove It Up Your Ass is about how I fell in love with anal play. And the irony was that it was my girlfriend was the person who got me to fall in love with anal. And there I already was out as bi at this point. And I think I'd bottomed once in my life with a guy who I trusted. We were dating, worked in the same office together. And like, I had a terrible experience doing it. I like, if you've never bottomed before and the only experience you have is like shit coming out of your ass, you just think you're shitting the entire time. That's what it feels like. And so I kept on being like, am I shitting on you? And he's like, no, you're fine. He's like, I'm like, I really think I'm shitting. I'm finally around like the sixth time. He's like, if you shit, you shit. Please stop asking if you're shitting on me.
You're fine. You're fine.
And I'm like, fine. I was clenching for dear life, not breathing. Aww. Definitely did not use enough lube. After we had sex, like I went to wipe and it was just like all blood. You know what I mean? Like, and I was like, you know what? Bottoming's not for me. There's enough gay bottoms out there that I'm doing a service by being a proper top. But then when I dated this woman and she was so excited to do butt stuff on me, and I told her my experience, and she's like, well, you did everything wrong. Like you literally did absolutely everything wrong. Like, I really want you to do this. This is like something that really turns me on. And I really think you'd love it and enjoy it. And so she kind of told me what I need to do. She's like, watch porn, make sure you're aroused, you know, relax, breathe, use a ton of lube. For some reason, what I ended up doing was going in the shower and using conditioner, which is, again, not good. I'm trying to not fall over while watching, like, I'm like contorting like a pretzel, trying not fall over in the shower.
Wait, conditioner to masturbate?
You conditioning?
No, in my asshole. It's like, it's lube in my asshole.
I've never heard of that.
Don't do that, because it's not a thing. Don't do it. I don't know why.
Don't do it. And so this is why everyone needs Uber lube. Uber lube.
No conditioner.
Yeah.
It's literally why. And I told her what happened. She's like, you didn't do anything right again. Like, what the fuck? Like, I literally told you what to do. You did not do it right. She's like, Zach, I'm going to finger your asshole. And I'm like, okay, since I'm such an amazing boyfriend, yes. And so she did. I fucking love it. She was blowing me while fingering my asshole. It was amazing, life changing. I came my face off and then became obsessed with it. But then also,
I like this person. Can I just say, I really like her.
She's great. I'm trying to remember, what's her fake name in the book? I think Jenny is her fake name. Okay. I always, sometimes in interviews, I've like said the real name. I'm like, can you believe that? Yeah. Sorry, my bad. I forgot what the fake name is. But also the larger context of the book is how anal play on men is not specifically gay, right? Like we have a prostate, it feels good. If you want a man to fuck you in the ass, yes, that is very gay. But if you're just enjoying, you know, the actual pleasure of it, and a lot of it's talking about how we need to expand our definition of kind of like heterosexuality and masculinity in a way, because right now we have such a limited like definition of what it means to be a man, and anything outside of that is like queer or non-binary in a way where I'm like, I actually think we're doing a disservice. We're not allowing like men to explore. And since we know gender is a construct, then it means like, okay, then we can expand what masculinity is. But because, you know, men are so afraid of being perceived of as gay or effeminate, they don't engage in anal play. They don't dress the way that they want to dress. And I actually think there would be less homophobia if we allowed straight men to be more effeminate to explore these things in a way where we don't immediately call them gay. So it's actually being like me talking about how we need to expand masculinity. We need to be supportive of everyone and allow them to explore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, when we worked at when Pure Pleasure, now it's just online, but when I started my career in the sex toy industry and worked at Pure Pleasure,
the brick and mortar,
I remember I would love my favorite customers were a couple when it was like a dude and his partner that was a woman, usually shopping for a dildo that she could peg him with. And I'd be like, they would kind of be timid at first. And then there were certain couples that would come back for bigger dildos later, like a few months later. And I was like, how'd it go? Like, yeah. I love that. And I just thought it was so fucking badass. And that's the thing. And that was 2008, 2009. Mm. So you'd think that we'd be so much further, that we've taken a step, a huge leap forward instead of tiny steps. And I think that perhaps reframing just that age old patriarchal establishment if you get anything in your butt, you're gay. It's like, yeah. No.
We were just talking about this. We recorded a podcast with Charlie Glickman earlier, and it's on prostates and buttholes is the title. And we were just talking about this. The behavior does not determine your orientation.
Exactly.
It is like you're deciding it's about who you're attracted to. And you decide it, but you do a thing. It doesn't make you a thing.
Yeah.
You know, of course, like abiding by consent, but there's other ideas. Like what he had a funny example of, like, I think it was with pizza or something. Like, I don't know. He had an interesting example. I listened to that episode if you want to hear more than that. But that's what you're saying too. It's like, you know, I'm doing this thing. This doesn't make me a certain way. I just discovered this is pleasure and I like it in this way. And I also have a prostate and ass and I might be a man. And it feels good.
I like my partner who's a woman to peg me.
Plenty of straight dudes like to be pegged.
I just had this conversation with a bunch of straight dudes the other day. And they're like, no. I was like, do you know what pegging is? They're like, what do you mean pegging? And I was like telling them, and they're like, that would make me gay. And I was like, no, it doesn't. I
know.
The weed industry, the cannabis industry, sometimes in California, I'm like, bros, you got to stop broing out so much.
Too much bro.
We got to get less testosterone here. And let's just give you some information.
And it's fine. If you say you're not into it, that's cool. You don't do it. That's cool.
Right.
But it doesn't mean if someone else does it.
I feel like they'll shut themselves off from trying it because they're afraid.
You're missing out. I heard there's a really magical button.
Most straight men do. Yeah.
Right. So that was good tangent because I appreciate all that. So here's another one for you, Zach.
From your book.
From your book. Once a cheater, always polyamorous. I think I get it, but please tell me more.
Sure. So that chapter, I have two chapters. That's a two-parter on that one because there was too much to discuss there. But yeah, so I've been polyamorous for about a decade as well. I think it really did coincide with me embracing my bisexuality. There is a big intersection for me personally. And I don't want to, of course, I say that it's like, no, not all bi people are poly, but I am. Yes, I am bi and poly, right? And yeah, I think a lot of what those chapters were about was figuring out what the best relationship style is for you. You know, I think we have this idea that relationships are, especially monogamous relationships, have to look this one way to be successful. And if you're able to step off that relationship escalator, if you no longer define a relationship success by longevity, you know what I mean? There's so many people, and I think about my parents' age, who it's like they have hated their spouses for forever. And they've been together for 40, 50 years and one dies and they consider their relationship a success because they remained married for 50 years. And I'm like, this sounds like a complete failure to me. This sounds like you were miserable for 50 years. But in their minds, nope, we stayed together through thick and thin and I stood by my word. And therefore, this was a successful relationship. I'm like, what a sad life.
That's my mother. I swear. It's so sad.
It's just like that is like, again, I'm not trying to say so in a condescending, pedantic way, but I mean, like that is just sad. And so what these chapters I do is try to be, even within monogamy, being like, these are the various ways that you can have a different type of relationship and how you can build your own relationship with someone else and how it can be, you know, non-monogamous, poly, open. Even if you are monogamous, how it can be maybe more egalitarian if you're a man and a woman dating in a way that is more beneficial to you, in a way that's more, that you feel more love with each other. Or you can have a relationship where sex is not the glue that holds it together, right? And I talk about that in the book too, where someone as highly sexual as me, and I love having sex with my partners, but sometimes that sex kind of, like, for me, often sex is about the newness, the novelty, the excitement, the kink. And when I love someone, it's like, oh, I love you. Like, I don't want to have sex with you. I love you. You're my partner. You know what I mean? And being like, even someone like me who's so highly sexual and loves sex, but maybe doesn't want to have so much sex with my primary partner, that doesn't mean anything's wrong with our relationship. Doesn't mean I necessarily have intimacy issues or avoidance issues. It just means like, okay, how can I find a relationship where we still have strong intimacy together and we love each other and we support each other and we respect each other and we feel, you know, loved, but sex isn't the glue. So how's that relationship going to work? Mm. So these chapters were really kind of showing you what the options can be. And encouraging you to discover what your unique relationship orientation is and then kind of giving you the tools to go out and find it.
I love that what you just said about that, because I think that's, for some people, like, wait. If we're having sex, we're supposed to love each other, right? Or like, the person I love, I should want to fuck all the time. And like, we see this in long-term monogamous relationships, lust phase ends and all of a sudden there's less sex. This isn't all of them.
Yeah.
But this is common and common.
Most of them.
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, you're the 20 years, your sex life will change and your body will change. It's just inevitable. Don't try to hold on to it. But we look at that as like, that's normal though. But like, what wouldn't be normal, air quotes, would be, okay, and not everyone's poly, right? But for a poly person, like, okay, here's my partner who I love, who I have sex with, but I'm actually more interested in having sex with other people where there isn't that like deep love, maybe it's like caring or caretaking for kind of thing. And you're saying, like, in your experience, like that's part of your operating system and that there's nothing unusual about that.
And that's me. And it's so tough. I've gotten a lot of flack for this chapter and being like, you are encouraging emotional avoidance and emotional, like, people with attachment issues or people who have sexual trauma, and you're enabling them to not have sex with their partner and not working on it. And I'm like, no, I mean, you know, it absolutely could be that. And that's the reason why they don't want to have sex with their partner, because they have emotional trauma or intimacy issues, whatever it is. And of course, you should work on that as well. But I think some people are hardwired differently. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Sex is different for different people. And also, sex wanes over time. So actually, if your relationship is solely based off of sex, and that's the glue that holds you together, you actually might be in trouble six months, a year, 2 years down the line when that starts fading a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I got a lot of flack for that. I was like, no, I'm not trying to enable emotionally avoidant people or people with attachment issues. I'm just trying to be like, hey, you might have a different relationship with sex. And if you do, that's okay. And how can you have love and intimacy with your partner if sex might not be the most important thing or end all be all?
Yeah.
Haters gonna hate.
And I won't name names or give details, but I actually am working with a client who has a similar experience as you, but as a partner with someone where sex isn't the main thing that they want to share with their primary, and that person, their partner, wants to share it with more with some other people. And so this has been really helpful for me because I'm going to meet with them sometimes soon. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So as we wrap up, if you could give your top tip for embracing your inner empowered sluttery, what would it be? It could be two tips. Tips.
I think what it is exploring and learning what you like, and then learning, I guess, okay, three parts to this. So number one, learn what you like, explore without judgment or shame, learn how to ask for what you like and without shame. And then third, learn how to accept rejection gracefully.
Mm-mm.
Right. So I think it's like, if you can get in a place where you feel comfortable asking, like knowing what you want, asking for it, you're shocked by how often, if you ask for something, you're actually able to get it. If you do so in a kind way, obviously, if you're going up to a random stranger asking them to fuck, no, I mean, you have to have some rapport, some relationship here. But a lot of people are down to explore. And then, yeah, I think rejection is kind of the last important component of this. And I actually have a whole chapter of rejection in the book too.
And how to take on rejection, or?
Yeah. How to both handle rejection, how to reject other people. Both are very important.
Okay. Yeah.
Both very important. And being like, if you're going to be a slut, you're going to get rejected. You know what I mean? And that is okay. And if that is soul crushing, that's going to negatively impact your mental health. The same way, if you're a slut, or at least for me, I still sometimes struggle rejecting people. That's actually, I'm fine with getting rejected, but rejecting other people I really struggle with. And a lot of people get very angry or upset when I reject them, especially when your moniker is the boy slut and you talk about having sex with everyone. And then you don't have sex with this one person. They're like, what the fuck? But you fuck everyone. I'm like, well, I don't actually have sex with everyone. You know that, right?
Slut does not mean you fuck everyone. It's more than one person.
Yeah, like, no, I still do have, like, standards, and I'm not gonna, like, have sex with you just because you asked me. Although, if you're really hot, I probably would. But, like, with rejecting people, I've gotten chewed out. People have gotten so mad and so angry at me. Or if, like, we hooked up once and it was fine, I didn't want to date with them again, they'd be like, you used me for sex. And I'm like, well, we hooked up and I didn't enjoy it. Like, what? So now I have to marry you? Like, I don't understand. Like, now we're together forever. So I think, yeah, that's the last component, is learning how to accept rejection gracefully and being honest and direct when rejecting other people, letting them feel their emotions, because often people get upset, and then continuing on your merry way here.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like with those tips, those three, and maybe not the four, with rejection, I think that's almost a separate
practice. Yeah, it's a little bit different.
But I value that, because I struggle with rejection in general in life, even if I don't get in sales, you know, with my company, with Hot Octopus, I'll like get a rejection talking about how the penis toys, you know, they didn't sell in the store, and I feel like it's a rejection. I feel like my tail goes between my legs, and I just start to be like, whoa. And it's so hard. And it's parallel, because it happens to me in my, I've had a lot of compliant sex because of that. Now I'm more aware, but I have had, because not being able to reject people and being rejected on the same end has been really difficult in my journey in life, whether it's like sex or friendship or life. Anything that's happening.
You're a caretaker of people's emotions.
Yeah.
So you want everyone to feel good. You don't want to hurt people. You don't want to disappoint people. And that's its own level of work, because we're always going to be disappointing people.
I'm struggling. That is my therapy. That is of my therapy, is being like, why do I feel so responsible for other people's emotions?
Why? And
like,
where does that come from, Zachary?
And you can't take it on. Oh, it's childhood. Okay, I know. Everyone. We know about this.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, my God. We're probably all in the same therapy. Let's go.
I know. I mean, I always was a pleaser. Also, though, setting the rejection piece aside, I just wanted to highlight that practicing, I think, would probably be the best way that for the top tips, those kind of those three pieces. Practicing, I know that it gets easier the more you speak to your own needs, the more you practice.
It's a muscle you flex. Yeah.
So I think that's like a great way. Also, tapping into your own pleasure, learning about your own body, not expecting any partners to bring you your pleasure. You have to be able to know what you're into to guide folks that you're hooking up with or that you're in long-term partnerships with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just wanted to highlight that.
I love sluttery.
I love sluttery too. And slut is not a bad word in my dictionary, but neither is fuck or cock or shit or damn.
Or balls.
So that all said, I really enjoyed speaking with you. I know that Amy did too. This was so fun.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah. You're a badass. You're a badass boy slut. So how can people find you, your book, all the things? Sure. I know you've been on a lot of podcasts. We adore you. So also your Fun Factory dildo.
Ooh, oh yeah. I have to do a plug. I have literally a Fun Factory dildo that is a dildo in bisexual flag colors. And it is a smaller dildo. It has less than 5 inches of insertable length. So it's definitely good for beginners. If you are a guy who wants to try pegging, this is also compatible with a harness. It is a suction too. It's a great beginning dildo. And it's a way to show your bi pride, but that's on Fun Factory. And you can actually buy the dildo or package it while buying the book, and you get a discount.
What's the dildo name?
It's called the Buy a More.
Okay, buy a more.
Do you have a special discount code for it that people get, or how do they?
I do not. I could probably ask Fun Factory for one.
Oh, they just go to the website to see.
Yeah, just go to the website.
Okay. .us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's that. Also, so when you go to Google or Amazon for boy slut, you have to do it as one word. It is one word, and and that's on purpose, because I would have gotten fucked if it was two words, because slut is a bad word. So I would have gotten dinged and not come up on Amazon. So we actually had to do it as one word, because that doesn't like register the same way. But people be like, I can't find your book, but I know it's everywhere. And I'm like, it's one word. So that's the issue. But yeah, so Boy Slut, it's on Amazon. It's at anywhere books are sold. And then, yeah, honestly, the best way to follow me is on Instagram, ZacharyZane__ at the end. And then my website is ZacharyZane.com, where you can follow, yeah, be up to date with the things that I'm up to and learn more about me.
And you're Zach with a C-H, not a C-K, right?
Yeah, ZacharyZane_.
All right.
And you write, you still have your column with Men's Health.
Yeah. Oh, so two more. Yeah, I should plug everything, really. Okay. So I also write Sexplain It, which is the sex and relationship advice column at Men's Health. That is a weekly column. And yeah, you can write in for your questions and I'll answer them. I also just recently got a non-monogamy column at Cosmo, which is monthly.
Awesome.
And then last but certainly not least, I have a digital zine on Substack called Boy Slut, which is either great branding or very confusing. But that is different than the book. This is actually just, I publish nonfiction erotica. So sex stories that have happened to real people. And I'm letting you know now, it is extremely raunchy. It is extremely graphic. I write most of the stories, but I also have contributors. So once a month, someone comes in with their wild sex story and I write about it. And so it's erotic. It's fun. People love to tell me exactly when they came while reading it, which I appreciate.
That's
and
hot.
There's always like a fun, I try to do something with like a larger overarching narrative too. So it's like something I learned about myself, something that speaks to the intersection of like tech and sex or something different and unique. So there is, it's not just smut. There is like some cool learning aspects to it as well. And I am telling a story, but it is extremely raunchy. So yeah, that's Boy Slut and that's on my Substack. And if you Google Boy Slut one word, my book will come up. The Substack will come up. I will come up. That's the way to kind of find all of my, all my stuff there.
And for clarity, I know everyone got it, but Boy Slut isn't just for boys. Or it's for anyone over 18, I'm assuming, but anyone.
Yes, over 18, I think is good. I think that's good.
You can say that, but I'm going to say I think some, you know, bisexual, bi-curious folks that are 16 probably could benefit from it. It's not going to ruin their lives, but that's just me. But you probably can't say that.
Someone asked me recently, like being like, hey, I'm a teacher. I have like some kids who are gay, bi, 16, 17. And like, what do you think? Is it appropriate for them? And I said, you know, this is a book I wish I had when I was 16.
Yeah.
That said, there is a lot of raunchy content in here. There's a lot of stuff in here that you might want
to read.
Oh, the
things they're hearing on the playground and watching porn. They're fucking fine.
Yeah, I think it's fine. But I'm like, you should be a teacher and read it yourself and decide. Maybe that's what you should do if you're a mom, like reading. Yeah. I had a mom who came to one of my readings with their daughters who were like 15, and it was actually so beautiful. And the way that like she was clearly supporting her daughters, 15, 16, I guess the age, they had some questions. They had recently had as bisexual, but she wanted to be there because I am a raunchy, more explicit. You didn't even actually get that scope in this, but usually I am. And I was like, what a great fucking mom.
Mm-hmm.
What a great way to be there and to frame it the way she wants to frame it and to buy the book and read it with their daughters.
Yeah,
I don't think I think that you also are educational because like the raunchy thing to me, I don't receive that. Granted, I'm sure there's some excerpts that could be maybe a little bit more taboo or wild. However, I think the kink chapters.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. You could just rip those pages out if you have a 15. I'm just kidding. Don't do that. I don't want to.
You could.
But it just like, it doesn't make kids do it more. I'm sorry. Like kids read something about a kink scene, not kids. I'm talking about a 12-year-old. Let's say like a 16 or 17-year-old. They read a kink scene in a book or they see it in porn. It does not make them want to like necessarily go out there and do the thing. They might be turned on. It might be spank, but it's not like, oh no, I have to do that. That's not like a guaranteed fact that they will do it if they read it or see it. So I know you know this, but like, you know, society still thinks so.
No, it's good. It's good to tell listeners here.
They're going
to
be okay.
Think your book is just intelligent and beautiful and
thank
so
you.
Necessary. So thank
really
you, Zachary Zane, for just creating this beautiful book and for your columns that are now available everywhere. Check out all of Zachary's offerings or Zach's offering.
Zane.
To our listeners out there, we love you so much. Remember, the reason this is free to you is because of our carefully chosen ad people, their products, their services, anything that we hand select. Amy and I do really choose carefully. So buy the stuff that we have on our ads. Don't just skip over. It's usually really at a good deal. And the other piece is we're here every Tuesday, free for you. And if you rate us on iTunes or Spotify, just do both.
Yeah,
if you can. If you have time, just do both. Actually, they don't even let you write anything on Spotify.
So it's easy.
Just listen to it for about 30 to 60 minutes and just give us 5 stars. It helps more people out there find folks like Zachary Zane and all of the experts, doctors, sex educators, and et al. That's for you, Zachary, because I know that you're an author. So et al. Is and more, right? So, so it helps people find these folks so they can help themselves have more amazing sex. All right, y'all. That's all I have for you. And that's all Amy has. And Zachary, he has more. I'm sure he's...
Go read a whole book coming at you.
Yes.
Yes. All right. We love you all. We'll see you next Tuesday.
Take care.
Ciao for now.
Want to learn more? Go to shamelesssex.com. And for 15% off of some of our favorite sex toys, use coupon code SHAMELESSSEX at purepleasureshop.com.